Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Cutting the Curd is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country? For more information, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
It's a lovely afternoon here at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and we are recording another episode of Cutting the Curd. If you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, you can tune in to Heritage Radio Network at heritageradionetwork.org to listen to past episodes of Cutting the Curd and a whole host of other wonderful foodie programs. So definitely check out the site. I'm here today with my co-host, Greg Blaze.
Hello there.
Hello there. And I'm also here in studio with Chris George, who is the founder of Cheese Journeys.
Hello, Ann.
Hello, Chris. And we have on the phone with us today, Sue Sturman, who is a frequent guest, a returning guest. And we're going to be talking today about cheese travel. Sue, are you with us?
I sure am. Hi, everyone. I'm sorry I'm not there. That sounds like a real fun group.
It's pretty good. Yeah, not too shabby. So, you know, we're going to talk about cheese travel today. Both you, Sue, and Chris have taken this passion of learning about cheese, traveling and learning about cheese, and really turned it into a career for yourselves. And I think that that's something...
I know. I've been watching online what Chris and Anna have been up to, and I'm excited about what your project.
We're pretty excited as well. It's taken a long time to get it to where it is, but it was born out of just to take people closer to the cheesemakers. I think more than anything else, I think you probably know as well, one of the best things we get to do in this business, and Anna knows this as well, and I guess
Absolutely.
We all do, is visiting cheesemakers, meeting the people who make it. I think that's the best part of the job. And if you can get other people to do that or give them the opportunity to do it, then that's a great thing. And it makes them appreciate the product a lot more as well. So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's very interesting talking about that. I feel like I want to ask you both, actually, Sue and Chris. I mean, I feel like when you guys were coming up, and I feel like it was the same for Greg and I, if you wanted to learn about cheese and travel and learn about cheese, there was no good way to do it other than just kind of figuring it out and going yourself, maybe making some awkward phone calls to cheesemakers, hoping that somebody would be willing to host you.
I was kind of lucky because I got the people at Neil's Yard Dairy to make awkward phone calls. It might be hard. And I just went along and met the people. So I was in a privileged position. I didn't appreciate it so much then as I do now, but I was very privileged to get to do some of the things I did, for sure.
That's great.
Yeah, and I've had some great connections as well. I remember I think it was 2012, I decided to head over to Paris, and this was before I had a formal association with Mons. In fact, it was this trip where my association with the Maison Mons really sort of grew out of a conversation with Hervé during this trip. But I decided to go over to Paris because I missed Paris and wanted to interview cheesemongers in Paris about their take on American artisanal cheese. And I had lived in Paris, but I hadn't lived there for, 15 years and didn't still have those contacts that fresh. So I contacted Hervé, and he set up interviews for me he gave me the contacts, and I set up the interviews with, the Meilleur Ouvrier de France cheesemongers in Paris. And it was funny, walking in, these people didn't know me, and you know, were willing to meet with me. So having connections is pretty great.
And I think,
and that's, I think, what Chris, you and I can offer is that, you know, offer those out to a greater number of people and make that access a little easier.
Yeah, I think as our community grows larger, especially as more people sort of get into cheese as enthusiasts or as professionals, you know, there's just more and more access needed. So to sort of make that leap from being interested to actually traveling and learning, it's wonderful that you guys have these structures now set up for people.
I think the more, the closer you are to the production of the food, the more you appreciate the food that you eat. And I think that's becoming more apparent, or people are more aware of that now these days. And I think, you know, it really does. If you've been to a place and seen a piece of cheese being made or whatever it is, when you eat that piece of cheese, it fires your synapses in ways that it doesn't when it's just an anonymous piece of something on a counter,
comes in a box,
or in a packet, or whatever it is. Yeah, and actually, it's little things like that can really, it enhances people's lives in many ways, I think. It's a great thing.
You say as the industry grows and more people need access, I think it makes a lot of sense to have people as, not gatekeepers, but there needs to be, you don't want a million people calling the one person. You know, you need to group them together and get one person together, bringing them together to meet the producers.
I have to say, I'm very conscious of that with what I've done with Cheese Journeys, and Anna Jewel, my partner as well, simply because, you know, it isn't a tourist industry. These are working farms.
Exactly.
These are working people. You have to respect that fact. And I don't want people trips, hordes of people trips.
No.
We want small groups, you know, just once or twice a year. And also, I want to remunerate those people for allowing us to visit as well. Because if you can give somebody, say, £300 sterling, you know, for a two-hour visit, that's a lot of money to a small farmer. So actually they're gaining something from it. And, I want everybody to win in that relationship. So
And the other side of it is when you're dealing with, you know, bringing people who speak one language into an environment where it's a different language, it's not only taking care of the producers, which is, of course, you know, important and you know, that's already been talked about, but taking care of the customers, the clients who, you know, may not know the infrastructure, who, you know, may not know who to contact and how to get there and how to get around and the currency and the electricity. And, you know, I get emails and calls all the time. Can you set me up to do an internship with a French cheesemaker? Well, no.
Yeah,
you don't speak
that
French,
easy.
They don't speak English.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't happen that way. Mm. And so, you know, trying to bridge these gaps, those of us that love travel and that love putting people together, I think this is it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
Now, can we touch a little bit? Chris mentioned, you know, £300 sterling. It's just a number, you know. But you know, the cost of you know, putting these things together is not small.
No.
And I know that sometimes when people look at a price tag for a trip, they can be a little, you know, they can be large price tags. And because you're, like you said, you know, the virtuous cycle kind of includes you who are planning the trip and putting your time in. It includes the travel. It includes remunerating the person who's going to be giving you the tour and showing you around their farm. Can you talk a little bit about the cost and kind of what goes into, what's the value that you're getting for this kind of a trip?
Do you want to go first, Sue, or shall I?
I'll go first. We're just starting out on this. We just announced that we're going to be organizing these sort of professional-level gastro-tourism, whatever we call it. And we're really pitching ours to professionals, not pure cheese enthusiasts. And it's so far, what we've got planned is, and what we're thinking about is strictly around cheese. What I'm trying to do to keep, one of the things to keep the costs low is to group the events around other events, that people might be traveling to anyway, so that they can amortize their airfare a little bit better. You know, I'm sure that we'll be doing something associated with cheese in Bra in 2016. I'm looking at working with the School of Artisan Food and doing something around the Science of Cheese Symposium in August. So there are a number of ways that we can do that so that it's an add-on to something you're already planning to do. Mm. And that's one way to make it a little bit more accessible for people.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm. Absolutely. Mm. Chris, do you have any comments as far as the cost of these things go?
I have to say, I like to be able to make it as accessible as possible. The thing we're doing right now is we're actually offering something which is a little bit, it's quite top-end. We were staying at North Cadbury Court, Jamie Montgomery's family home, you know, which is a great place to stay.
Yeah.
But it's a big family home. You know, it doesn't come super cheap, but at the same time, it offers you access to something that you would not get otherwise. At the same time, we're also, I mean, part of the of what we get goes towards the DCTA to help support cheese professionals in this country
sure.
to go do
wonderful.
Stuff. And yeah. also we're offering a first prize for the Cheesemonger Invitational as a free trip to Cheesemongers.
This one in June? This one coming
yeah,
up?
Yeah, oh,
wow.
That should be the first one.
Oh,
we're going to keep
great.
On doing that. So, and that includes the airfare. So we're going to sort of, so that the almost the Daphne philosophy, but also put on the Cheesemonger Invitational as well. So that gives... I think it's great for them to get cash prize, but I think the opportunity to travel, which a lot of cheesemongers don't get to do,
yeah.
is fantastic. And I'd like to get cheese professionals involved as well on some level, just because I think it changes the dynamic of the group if you have cheese professionals involved as well. And I think the people who are not in the food industry, the cheese industry, get a lot more out of it if they're surrounded by people who do work in the industry, because there's almost an osmosis there, and you can discuss.
Completely.
And you know, I think there's a lot to be said of not just sitting down in a classroom, but actually just talking to people. You know, seeing things, experiencing things firsthand, I think that you can't put a price or a value on.
And that's how you
that
grow your community.
Thing.
I mean, in reality,
yeah,
that's how
exactly.
that's how it really happens.
Yeah, and I think for people like Jamie Montgomery, he's quite thrilled to have us travel there as well.
Sure.
And he'd like
yeah.
to have cheese professionals come as well, because it as somebody, as a cheesemaker, a very passionate cheesemaker.
Sure.
You know, spreading the words. Is
it's huge.
It means a lot to him, mm-hmm. you know, especially because to the American, you know, market as well, because he sells a lot of cheese in the American market, but he's removed from that. So the more contact he can get with people in America, the better. And I think sending back educated customers, clients, is important as well. You know, I think there's a value in that.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Absolutely.
Whenever I traveled and I got to see. Faces, you know, I've got to put faces to the names on accounts, mm. you know, that I bought purchased cheese from, you know, it just, everything just became different for me.
Yeah.
The way that I handled the product, you know, the way that I thought about purchasing it,
mm.
it's, you know, you're always trying to show the maximum amount of courtesy to to the people and the products, but it just becomes different when you get that face time, for me anyway. I don't know if that's the same for you.
I have to say I was lucky with Neil Zard because
yeah.
they're all about getting staff and customers,
sure.
You know, in contact with the cheesemaker. Because I remember the first time Randolph Hodgson and I set off in a van to Somerset, you know, and we went to Duckett's. That was when Chris Duckett was alive, making
yes.
Duckett's Caerphilly. And we went to his farm, and he's there making cheese. And I go out to the back, and in the garage in the back, there's his mother hand-patting the butter.
Amazing.
Putting a different pattern on the top of each day's butter so you knew what day it was made. And so I go back to the store,
wow.
and then I'm selling that butter. And every time I look at the top of this packet of butter, I have an emotional attachment to it.
Of course.
And then I can't help but enthuse to the customer. Then they're
yeah.
enthused,
yeah.
and everybody's winning. And it's a wonderful... Sorry, I got goosebumps there talking
me
about
too.
That.
Yeah.
Really, me too! That there in a nutshell is what I'm talking about.
It seems
yeah.
so simple,
well, so
but
much
it
of is... cheesemongering really is the story and the romance mm. and the connection... And so mongers, you know, in the States certainly have really tapped into that in an enormous way. And, when they have the opportunity to get out and do what you did, Anne, you know, back in your cheese by hand days, go around and do a blog and connect with people, I think it really enhances everything for their clients.
Absolutely.
I think as well, the thing about the American market and the US is that, you know, the history is in Europe. I mean, I think the history of American cheesemaking and, I mean, brewing as well, if you think about things like that.
Absolutely.
It's a very young culture in that way. And it was a very industrialized culture. And I think people have had to look elsewhere for their inspiration. And they've taken that kind of baton, if you like, and really run with it. But it's nice. It's the more you can put them in contact with the history of cheesemaking, I think that the easier it is to build a strong artisanal cheesemaking community in the United States. And I think that's happening. It's obvious, you know.
I actually would say that we're starting to have a cheese history of our own. It's not as venerable as the European cheese history, but it's very, very different. And, you know, there's been a lot of conversation about the cheese naming issue. And, you know, that connects into the AOP and the PDO and the IGP and all of those abbreviations for place names. And you know, I think that American cheese has quite a different story than European cheese. And I think it's a really interesting story. And I think that's what makes American cheese really unique, is that we come, you know, and I'll be bold and say that I don't personally think American cheese is nearly as much about terroir as it is an expression of the individual cheesemaker. And it's not that, it's different. In Europe, it's really an expression of terroir. And, you know, we don't build our cheese out of the ground. We build our cheese out of our heads.
I think it's interesting you say that, because I think the English cheese making, a craft cheese, artisan cheese, farm fresh cheese, it's actually closer to American cheesemaking than it is to continental European cheesemaking, because of things like two world wars, rationing.
Yeah.
You know, basically by 1954, I was born in 1970 in the northeast of England, and I grew up eating cheese that came out of tubes.
My share of that.
Yeah, and basically out of plastic wrappers, and basically with more consistency than flavor.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until, say, the late 70s, 80s, people started to go, I'm going to hand make a cheese. Yeah, I'm going to make a cheese from the milk from an animal. And so I think it's much closer, in a sense, to American cheesemaking than it is to Europe, continental European cheesemaking.
That's very true.
Yeah, you had a similar rupture
to
our rupture.
Yeah.
And a reliance on science, you know, for food. So I feel like that even creates a stronger hunger for people to learn and to travel and to do these things. Although, you know, it's funny. I remember when I was in France, I lived for a little while. I was one of those people who pestered. I pestered Hervé, just as Sue did. And I wound up on a couple of different goat dairies making cheese in the Loire Valley as sort of a stagiaire. And even there, you know, I remember it was August when I was there. And so we would watch the news around the lunch table. They parked the TV at the end of the lunch table, which wasn't very French. But the program was so funny. They would go to a different region every day and they would profile an artisan. And oftentimes the artisan was a food producer. I remember they profiled a woman called Mamie Moule in Provence one day. And, you know, there were cheesemakers and knife makers. And so I feel like in France, anyways, it seems like sort of artisan products and tourism are kind of intertwined. People travel to seek these products out. And when they are in certain regions, they know what to look for. And I think that we'll start to see more of that maybe here, hopefully.
Yeah, when we lived in France, when my husband and I lived in France, we would, anywhere we went, we would find stuff. We went to a wild boar farm. We went to a quail farm. We went to, we were bicycling through Brittany, and we ended up on an oyster farm, and we, you know, rode down little lanes on our bikes and stopped at a hotel and said, "Where's the local cheesemaker?" And they said, "Well, go this way." And we went to the local cheesemaker. You know, it was really, this guy was a retired executive from one of the great fashion houses, and he had 15 goats, and he just made his cheese, and it was really fun.
That's great. That's great.
I think one of the problems, one of the things about Europe, I guess, which is advantageous, is that all these things are very concentrated in a small area. You know, we go to Somerset, you know, you've got three cheddar makers within 10 miles of Montgomery's, you know. I think the thing about, there's some amazing stuff in the US, but it's almost because it's such a big country, it's a lot more spread out in many ways. It's harder to visit lots of individual people.
American cheese makers and American cheese retailers. I've found in my experience most of the artisan product is sold in like metropolitan areas, that's what gets its most exposure. So those retailers don't get, you're so busy, you don't get the opportunity to travel as much and to see. I just think that's why what's important about.
Yeah, we used to be able to get in a van. I used to do it every 2 weeks, get in a van, drive west, visit 8 different farms, 9 different farms, pick up stuff, get back to London before the sun had gone down.
Yeah, the American cheese
you can do that if you live in Boston and you're just going to Vermont.
Right.
But you can't get to Wisconsin from
No,
here.
You can't. You just can't do that.
There, you know, that. Talking about cheese travel, that's one of the great things that the American Cheese Society offers in conjunction with their conferences every year, is that, you know, the conference is in a different place every year, and they're very, very, very careful to make sure that there are tours of local cheese makers and cheese retailers, and those are really great opportunities for people to take advantage of.
That is a very great point. And another cheese travel group that I wanted to be sure to mention on the show is Caputo Brothers Creamery. Rin Caputo has been a frequent guest on the show, and they also host twice annual trips to Italy, very focused on Italy and Italian cheese and Italian cuisine. But we should definitely give them a shout out, too. I'm looking. We have to take a very quick break to give a nod to our sponsor. But when we come back, we'll be back with Sue Sturman and Chris George to talk about cheese travel. Stay with us.
In the middle of a firestorm.
Today's break song is by Jen, Jaden, and the Greenstones called Firestorm. You're listening to Cutting the Curd.
It's whispering we can win. Soldiers knocking at his front door. Art over his mind of breath before he walks alive. Embracing fetus. Walks alive. Embracing
we are back. You're listening to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host is Greg Blaze, and today we're here talking about cheese travel with Sue Sturman, who is the director of the Anglophone program at the Academy Opus Caesius, and with Chris George, who is one of the owners of Cheese Journeys, a cheese travel company that does exclusively cheese travel. So I wanted to ask both of you about how your own traveling influences your learning and your planning of trips. I know, Chris, you just got back, you said, from Wisconsin last night.
Yeah.
So tell us about that trip and how you continue to travel and kind of add to your experience and how that influences your business.
I have to say, going to Wisconsin, I've never been to Wisconsin before, and obviously it's a big dairy state. I'd realize that. I hadn't quite realized that until I got there to the airport, and all you could buy was cheese hats. And things like that. It's very interesting. There's such extremes there. I mean, because you have the block cheddars, the big producers. I mean they dominate, and actually a lot of the people who there see. But then I had dinner with Andy Hatch, you know, on making, you know, Pleasant Ridge Reserve, and that's, you couldn't get more opposite ends of the scale. So it feels like, but it does feel like he works a lot with the university there. They help him a lot. Mm-hmm. And talking to him, talking to people from big industry, that's enlightening as well. Because I come from a farmstead, what you'd call farmstead, I call artisanal background. So it's really interesting to see both ends of the spectrum. But like I said, I think at the beginning, the more people you talk to, the more you learn. And one of the things I love about cheese, actually cheese, beer, wine, fermented products across the board,
is the best.
You can never know everything. If you think you know everything, you may as well quit, because you can never learn everything. And if you think you know everything, you'll never learn anything. You know, and I think that's the beauty of it. And it just, what thrills me is how I always come away and I feel like I've absorbed so much more information. You know, it's just a brilliant thing. It's a wonderful opportunity to.
So do you have plans to expand Cheese Journeys into some American trips as well?
We haven't looked into that yet. It's something I'd like to do for sure, because there are so many interesting producers around now in America. And I think also you can do it's more affordable for people as well. Mm. I like to try and offer opportunities to everybody, you know, whatever the budget. That's what I'd like to do. And as a cheesemonger, I still call myself a cheesemonger.
Once a cheesemonger, always a cheesemonger.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. If you cut me, it says cheesemonger all the way through, like a stick of rock, I think. But as a cheesemonger, I know that I worked very hard and I didn't earn a fortune. If you want to be a millionaire, don't become a cheesemonger.
Nope.
You know. So I'm acutely aware of the fact that there's lots of people. The people who I most like to put in front of the cheesemakers are the people who retail the cheese, because, like I said before, that enthusiasm they gain is infectious, and the customers get that as well. So I think I'm looking at things. I've been thinking about things just actually last night. I had an extended conversation with my wife while she was trying to go to sleep about about an idea I'd had about maybe using the space in England when we're there for British cheesemongers to be able to come and stay at Montgomery's and actually meet Jeremy and sort of things like that. And also that changes the dynamic for the people, for the non-cheese people. And I think it also makes it more interesting to have, I think the more mixed the group, the more people gain from it.
Yeah.
But I think doing that for the American market would be a fabulous thing as well. The more the merrier.
Yeah.
I'd like to be as inclusive as possible. That would be my ultimate goal.
Yeah.
And
one thing that I would love to do at some point, and I've had this in the back of my mind for a while, and it's not on offer yet, everyone, okay? But it's in the back of my mind.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned.
To bring French people to the States, to do cheese tours in the States, and, you know, as well as, you know, everything that I do is cheese travel in one way or another. It's cheese travel and education, because people are coming to the Academy in France, to Mons in France, for our courses, and for them, it's cheese travel. We've got people this year coming from Australia, Korea, Canada, the U.S. and the U.K. so far. And now we've got these programs that we're doing in collaboration with Jasper Hill. So far, everyone that's enrolling in those, in the Jasper Hill courses, is from the States, but not from Vermont. They're from all over the country. And so even our, you know, pretty much strict, what we consider our educational programs under the Academy Opus Cassius label, name, even that is... Oh, sorry, that's my other phone.
You're very popular.
Don't answer it.
Yeah, I'm not answering it. And then we're introducing our sort of more tourism, less... it's all education. It's all travel, it's all educational, but we're calling that premier class.
Can I ask you a question? Is that for non-cheese professionals, French non-cheese professionals, to come to America and visit cheesemakers?
Well, I haven't organized anything for French people to come to the States yet. It's just a dream that I have.
Yeah.
I have, you know, we've got a lot of interesting projects, and you know, I'm the Academy Opus Cassius in the States. Mm. So there's only so much capacity I have.
But,
you know, I'm sort of looking 2015, 2016 for something like that.
I think that's great. You know, I think that it's very interesting that you bring that up. That reminds me of a story. When I was in Bra this past fall, I attended one of the Neil's Yard Dairy dinners. There are these really fun dinners. They have them at this fun agriturismo little farm/hotel in a little town called Verduno. And essentially, Neil's Yard gathers all, they gather cheesemakers, they gather customers, friends, and it's kind of like, as Chris was saying, the more diverse the group, the better. And especially at this one dinner, it was literally like Jason Hines was playing like American dodgeball in gym class. Like, everyone stood in a line, and he paired you off to what table you were going to sit at. And, you know, so it was very, like, nerve-wracking, you know. I ended up getting sat at a table with all French speakers. I speak, you know, French, but not great. You know, I can get by. And I was speaking with one of the shop owners. He owned a shop in Paris, and he was a big supporter of Neil's Yard Dairy. And I thought, huh, how interesting, a French store that's really behind British cheese. And he said to me, well, you know, he's like, I had this customer that would always come into my shop, and he would just, you know, rave and rave and rave about Neil's Yard Dairy cheeses. And so this store owner just took a leap of faith, and he decided, well, you know what, I'm going to start buying these cheeses and bringing them in. And I feel like it takes a very special person to be that first person for you, Sue, who's going to say, I am a French person, I'm a French sure. cheese professional, or I'm a French yep. cheese lover, and I am going to be the one to spread the word and get people over to the States to learn about cheese.
Mm. And I think that we're at a point in the States where, you know, we actually are we can justifiably consider ourselves a cheese tourism destination.
Certainly.
I think as well, the other thing is about, so, I mean, it was 3 years today that I came to America, actually, funnily enough.
And, wow.
And it's
and we're glad you did.
I'm glad. I'm sitting in a beautiful beautiful studio with the sun shining and great conversation. How bad can it be? I think there's a lot to be learned from the American approach to things, because it is very much a go-get, you know, positive attitude, can-do thing. And also it could be because you're not bound in tradition. I think tradition could be a wonderful thing, but it can also be a hindrance. It can also be like, it can also hold you back in many ways. I think, you know, tradition is a great thing, but I think they're finding their boundaries here. And I think that's interesting and exciting.
So. And I feel like, just like you were saying before, Chris, when you say, you know, if you say you know everything, you know, you might as well quit. I feel like Americans are great at saying, I don't know anything. Yeah. I'm so excited. Teach me about everything.
Sure.
And that's not how most people are, you know, but I feel like that makes us a great, great candidates for learning about food
that's
and about
one of
cheese.
The things, it's that's like, one of the things that Laurent is constantly thrilled and tickled by. Is the Americans that come and say, I'm so excited.
Of course,
in French, it has a slightly different connotation. So it's amusing on that level, too. Another thing that's been interesting is we've been working more and more with Australian clients. I spent some time with some Australians who were at the American Cheese Society conference last year in Wisconsin, and they were really bowled over as you were referring to, Anne, at the openness of the Americans, at how collegial we are, that we're not closed and guarding secrets. We have this sense of generosity and openness in terms of sharing who we are, sharing what we're doing. And yes, of course, there's politics. There's always politics. Humans are humans. But I'm not sure how much we Americans appreciate what a fabulously positive, open, sharing, connected culture we have in this country, specifically in the cheese business. And that's something that, you know, I would like to see more people from more countries come and, you know, get a taste of and share that around.
I think it's something that I learned from years at Neil's Yard, actually. I think their policy, like Jason we've mentioned, and Randolph and so forth, is that the more the merrier, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think getting cheesemakers together in a room to, you know, and discussing things, because if you're a cheesemaker, more often than not, you've got your head in a vat on a farm in an isolated place. You don't see the customer, you don't see the cheesemakers. You know a lot about the thing that you do, but not necessarily
what
other people do.
And you don't know much about any other cheese,
exactly.
Either.
And so it's exciting for them, and the cross-fertilization, it's thrilling to watch when you see it happen. It's a brilliant thing.
By the same token, that's why, like, travel to the cheese retailer in America is, like, better than 10 paychecks. It's just, it's what you get. That's what you want when you're at the counter. That's what keeps your people employed, the access to those people, you know, that community, to feel that you're part of that community. It's just...
I don't think you can put a price on it either.
You can't.
It's very hard to. I think it's
another thing entirely. It's worth so much more. Or at least that's my experience as when I've been able to provide people with travel, and when I've been provided with travel, it's just worth more than the money I'm paid. It just brings you into a whole different understanding of what you do, and it keeps you interested on another level.
I have to say, when I look at a piece of cheese now, I can't just see a piece of cheese.
No.
Or a glass of beer, or a glass of whatever you like. It's just because I've had too much contact with the people who produce those
things. It's just a different thing.
And it has so many layers of meaning, you know.
When you open those doors, they're open. Like, they're open. You're in that. You're in that room, and that's where you reside.
You can be scientific, or you can be sociological,
exactly.
Or geographical, and all valid and all fascinating.
Certainly.
And all rich. You know, I think that's a wonderful thing. Yeah,
and that's, you know, another thing, another place where I get that kind of exposure.
Oh, I think we might have had a little bit of a hiccup.
Oh, no.
I really wanted to find out what she's called.
I know.
Me too, man. What
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Cliffhanger.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, it's actually, we are just about out of time, unfortunately. This always happens. You know, we start chatting and all of a sudden the half hour has just flown by. But Chris, I wanted to ask you, can you tell our listeners where to find out more about your trips and what is your next upcoming
trip? Absolutely. Just go to www.cheesejourneys.com. And everything should be there. And there's contact information there as well. We've got Instagram, Twitter, all that's up there as well. So you can check it out. We've got another trip planned for the UK in the fall. And we're looking to actually do some trips to Europe as well through our contacts with Essex Cheese and so forth. So Jura, Savoie, Alsace, maybe Holland. You know, we've got lots of opportunities. So, we're exploring those at the moment. Ooh. But watch this space, basically. Yeah.
Very, very exciting. And to learn more about the Academy Opus Cassius, you can Google them. I'm not, I don't have their website right in front of me, but if you go to Academy Opus Cassius, you can learn all about the different programs that Sue and her team offers through Hervé and Laurent Mons, fabulous educators. Thank you guys so much for being with us and
Thank you for the conversation.
Well,
I think Sue's here to say goodbye.
Oh,
hey.
There you are. No, it's fine. We were just saying we're actually out of time, so it was not an inopportune moment for the phone to go, but I did want to say goodbye to you, so thank you for calling back.
Thank you so much.
All right, well, thank
Chris,
you so
I hope we can meet in person sometime.
I'd love to. I'm sorry I missed you last summer. I hope to meet you very soon. That'd be great.
Yeah, will you be at Fancy Food?
You know what? I'm going to make sure I'm this time. Yeah.
Because
it's air conditioned in there, so I like it.
That's true. Well, thank you both for sharing, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Cutting the Curd.
Thanks, Anne. Keep up the great work.
Thanks.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world, or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.